Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC information. And we, of course, are back with a banger this weekend. UFC 302, the main event for the lightweight championship, Islam Makhachev versus Dustin Poirier. One last shot for Dustin Poirier. You already know we have full card preview and predictions for this episode. I'm excited. It should be a good card. We'll be in Newark, New Jersey for this one. New Jersey's being spoiled. Why are they getting so many UFC events? I don't know what's going on with that. Also on today's episode 95, almost at 100, I'm going to be going over the NBA and NHL, checking in with their playoffs, going over some new UFC fights, and as well, talking about discussing film, our new segment we do where we look at 10 new, how do we even phrase it? We look at 10 new things in TV, movies, you know, stuff like that, actors. I don't even know how you phrase it. It's just I kind of look at discussing film on Twitter. It's pretty interesting to see all that stuff. I do have some ideas for conspiracy theories that we can talk about on some future episodes. I just don't really have that much free time to cook it up. I mean, I honestly understand how when people get home from work, they just kind of, you know, chill. They just watch some TV. They sit on the couch. I mean, honestly, it is exhausting working a desk job, but I won't get too much into that. We're not trying to bum anyone out. Let's just get right on into the fun stuff, because Dana White, ladies and gentlemen, decided to break some brand new UFC news today. But before we get into that, we have some new UFC fights that have been announced in the last few days. And 5 days ago now, Dana White announced a big fight for UFC 303. Going down in the men's welterweight division, you have the undefeated, the fellow Irishman, as Conor McGregor. That's right, Ian the Future Gary. That's right, the number 7 ranked Ian Machado Gary will be taking on the newcomer, just beat Kevin Holland earlier this year in March, Michael Venom Page. Michael Page, MVP, ranked number 13. This fight's going down. It's going down. The 13-0 Ian Gary, who's 6-0 in the UFC, holds wins over Neil Magny, Jeff Neal, Daniel Rodriguez, takes on Michael Venom Page, who's 22-2, won his debut, as I mentioned, holds wins over Kevin Holland now, Paul Daly, Douglas Lima. I mean, this guy is legit. A lot of finishes between these two. I am pumped for this matchup going down at 303. And UFC 303 is, of course, going to be a massive, massive card with Conor McGregor and having a future Irish star in Ian Gary, who could become a star if he beats MVP. I mean, is going to be super good. But Michael Page, I mean, legend of the game. His striking style is very unique. Kevin Holland couldn't crack it. We'll see if Ian Gary can get it done. But I'm so happy that fight's going down. I cannot believe Colby Covington ducked Ian Gary. Colby Covington, I'm sorry, man. You're not earning any fans. I mean, the summer is going by, and it's not even looking like he's going to get a fight. And there are rumors. There are rumors in new UFC news, which is essentially what this whole segment is. Islam Makhachev said in the pre-conference, or the pre-press conference interviews that he does, that he's actually training with Charles Oliveira, potentially, as he might be taking on Colby Covington in a future match. So, I mean, Charles Oliveira working to improve his grappling as he might be moving up to welterweight, or maybe Colby Covington's dropping down to lightweight. I don't know, but that would be an absolutely massive fight. That's a co-main event of a pay-per-view right there. I kid you not. Other fights that were announced a couple days ago. On the lesser side, UFC Vegas 95 is officially going down August 10th, and we have an unranked heavyweight matchup between Carl Williams, who's 10-1 professionally, 3-0 in the UFC, with wins over Justin Taffa, Lucas Brzezinski, and Chase Sherman. And he'll take on the undefeated 7-0 Junata Dinez, who won his UFC debut against Austin Lane, knocked him out cold, actually beat, I think it was Eduardo Neves on Dana White's Contender Series. Either of these guys could be fighting for a bottom 50 ranked opponent right now, but now we're going to have them match up, and I'll be interested to see what happens. Both guys have knockout power. Both guys kind of like to grapple. I definitely think Junata Dinez is more of a striker and Carl Williams is much more of a grappler, so we'll see what happens there. But interesting fight in the men's heavyweight division. Heavyweight fights always a rare commodity nowadays, not necessarily the highlight division it once used to be. UFC Denver is actually going down at Ball Arena in Denver, Colorado on July 13th, and we have our first official fight confirmed for that card as Christian C-Rod Rodriguez, who is 11-1 professionally, 4-1 in the UFC, currently 3-0 at lightweight, with wins over Isaac Dalgarian and Cameron. Oh, actually, no. He's moving up to featherweight. My bad. He was fighting at bantamweight, beating Paul Raul Rosas Jr. and Cameron Sayman. Also beat Isaac Dalgarian. He actually was the first man to beat all three of those guys. So he's ended undefeated streaks left and right. And he gets a big name in Julian Arosa, currently unranked, but he's a 29-11 veteran. Holds wins over Charles Jourdain and Nate Landwehr. That should be an exciting one. Should be on the prelims. Actually, no, it'll probably be on the main card. I'm going to be honest, it's probably going to be on the main card. I am intrigued to see what goes down in that fight. I don't know. Not really much to say, but that's one of the better Apex fights when we look at it. Another fight is official for UFC 305 going down in Perth, Western Australia, on August 17th as King Casey O'Neill, who is 9-2 now, 4-2 in the UFC, who's actually from Australia and Scotland, will be taking on Teresa Bleda, who is 7-1, 1-1 in the UFC. Casey O'Neill was 9-0 before finally running into some tough competition. She's lost her last two fights to, I think it was like Cynthia Calvillo and Jennifer Maia. Not the best losses right there, but I mean, she holds a win over Roxanne Modafferi and Antonia Shevchenko. We'll see how she does. I give her a decent chance, but Teresa Bleda won her UFC, won her last fight in the UFC. Not too shabby, not much more to ask for. Now, we get to the big announcements we have had in the last 5 days, and especially today. Five fights announced for UFC Abu Dhabi going down August 3rd in Abu Dhabi. Of course, the main event, bantamweight matchup between Corey the Sandman Sanhagen and the undefeated Umar Nurmagomedov, matchup between the number 2 and number 10 ranked in the men's bantamweight division. And we now have more fights announced. Let's go through our first one. We head to the women's strawweight division as the number 7 ranked Mackenzie Dern takes on the number 10 ranked Lupi Godinez. Very happy for this fight. This fight makes so much sense. Lupi Godinez coming off of she was on like a 5-5 win streak before losing her last bout. I think it was by split decision to someone whose name I just cannot figure out. And it's coming to me, guys. It's coming to me. It was it's the weird-eyed chick. It's the weird-eyed chick. I'm staying with this thought. She lost to Mirna Jandiroba last time out by a split decision, though. So not too shabby. And as for Mackenzie Dern, a tough loss last time out to Amanda Lemos. But she's a dog. She's exciting. She's had 3 fight of the nights, 2 of which have been her last 2 fights. I mean, what more do you want from that? Mackenzie Dern, excited to see her compete in that one. But I also kind of like Lupi Godinez. So it'll be interesting to see how that one takes place. Another fight announced for UFC Abu Dhabi. We head to the men's light heavyweight division as the number 13th ranked Atomic Alonzo Menifield. He's already back after he was knocked out in 12 seconds to take on the undefeated 13-0 Azamat the Professional Mirzakhanov. Azamat Mirzakhanov holds wins over Dustin Jacoby, Devin Clark, Andre Munez. Dude is 3-0 in the UFC. I mean, 2 of those fights are knockouts. He's dropped all of his opponents in all their fights. This should be Atomic, the same nickname as Alonzo Medifield, who's 15-4, 8-4 in the UFC. Holds knockout wins over Paul Craig and Misha Cirkunov. Beat Dustin Jacoby. I love this fight. And if we saw anything from the last Alonzo Menifield fight, we know he loves to start early and swing for the fences. That should be a fun matchup. And honestly, the winner will be definitely getting a top 10 opponent. I mean, look at Carl Zuberg. He's fighting Jamal Hill on the co-main event of the Conor McGregor card. Look what can happen when you get a win and then get a big opponent after that. Interesting stuff. What fight should I mention next? Oddly, I think this is the least biggest of the 3 remaining fights we have for Abu Dhabi, and this will definitely be the co-main. Actually, no, I don't even think this is the co-main event. I think this is the 3rd to last, or could even be the 4th to last. I don't even know what they're gonna go with, but we have a bantamweight matchup between the number 4 ranked Marlon Chito Vera and the number 6 ranked Deiveson Figueiredo. I mean, come on, what more do you want? Marlon Chito Vera, fresh off of his loss to Sean O'Malley. It was tough. I mean, Sean still couldn't drop him. Still, he's yet to be dropped. Only losses in the last like 5 years, I think it is to Jose Aldo, Sean O'Malley, and Corey Sandhagen. So he's only lost to some of the best. Holds wins over Frankie Edgar, Sean O'Malley, and Dominic Cruz. By the way, knockouts over all 3 of those guys. Killer fighter. And he takes on the former flyweight champion, Deiveson Figueiredo, who's now 2-0 in the men's bantamweight division. Those wins over Cody Garbrandt and who would he beat? Rob Font. He actually holds wins over Alexander Pantoa and Brandon Moreno down at flyweight. This guy's an absolute killer. 12-3 in the UFC. I mean, I don't even know what to go with that one. I think I got right out of Devenson Figueiredo, but Marlon Vera is such a good gatekeeper. And by the way, I mean, he landed a couple of good shots in the Sean O'Malley loss. I mean, obviously not the greatest, but I mean, still entertaining enough. I'll be excited to see what happens, but I'll probably be rooting for the new blood in Devenson Figueiredo. All right, guys. All right, let's go with our third to last fight. We'll probably open the main card, or it might even be the third or fourth fight on this main card. He's back, guys. He's back. Tony Ferguson is back, and he takes on the former top five welterweight, Michael Chiesa. Man, Michael Chiesa has not fought in a long, long time. Last time Michael Chiesa got a win was over Neil Magny. Utterly ridiculous. As for Tony Ferguson, last time he got a win, it was 2019. So, I mean, not much better. Tony Ferguson's on either a 7 or 8 fight losing streak. I think it's at 7. I think he's on a 7 fight losing streak. Last win covered Anthony Pettis in 2019. He just recently lost to Paddy Pimblett last year. But as for Michael Chiesa, I mean, he just got submitted by Kevin Holland last year. Before that, in the previous year, he had been lost a unanimous decision to Sean Brady. So neither guy is really in a hot spot. I think Michael Chiesa might be on a 3-fight losing streak himself, finished in 2 of those by Darce choke, which is even funny enough. I mean, but my goodness, I did not expect to see that in my feed today. I'm probably going to go with Michael Chiesa. I don't know. I might ride with Tony Ferguson. He's yet to get a win. So, I mean, and I've picked him up. I picked Tony Ferguson a lot of times. Out of his 7 losses, I picked him to beat Gaethje. I picked him to beat Charles Oliveira. I picked him to beat Beneil Dariush. That was 3 losses. I did not pick him to beat Michael Chandler, I can tell you that. I did pick him to beat Nate Diaz. I did predict Paddy Pimblett to win. And didn't he have one more? I swore he had one more. I'm only at 6 right now. Who am I missing? Who am I missing in Tony Ferguson's losing streak? There's gotta be an oddball name. Did he have a decision win somewhere? I'm actually gonna find Tony Ferguson's record right now because I am a little curious. I swear he's on a 7-fight losing streak. That started with Gaethje. Who else could he have lost to? That's my question. Who else could Tony Ferguson? I swear he's lost to everyone. At this point, if you see someone on the roster, you can assume Tony Ferguson has beaten the mixed martial arts record. Bobby Green. I forgot Bobby Green choked him out at UFC 291. So, yeah. He last won in June of 2019. It was actually over Don Cerrone. And that snapped a 13-fight win streak. Since then, he's been TKO'd by Justin Gaethje, outgrappled by Charles Oliveira, Beneil Dariush, knocked out cold by Michael Chandler, submitted by Nate Diaz in round 4, submitted by Bobby Green in round 3, and was utterly dominated by Paddy Pimblett in December. Look, Tony Ferguson, I will forever love you, but I think Chiesa might do some grappling to handle business. But guys, that's not even the most shocking fight that was announced today, because the co-main event for UFC Abu Dhabi, this is a fight night on ABC, by the way, will be in the welterweight division, the 5 rounds, a 5-round co-main event. No, it's not for a title. As Vicente Luque, the number 14th ranked welterweight, takes on the former title challenger from over a decade ago, Nick Diaz. Nick Diaz, that's right. Nick Diaz, who was born in 1983. Nick Diaz, who is 41 years old, will, of course, be back, and he'll be fighting actually a day after his birthday, so even crazier at that. I mean, the Heels wins over Robbie Lawler, BJ Penn, and Frank Shamrock. That's how old we go back with Nick Diaz. I mean, come on, Nick Diaz, why are you fighting? He's also fighting a guy 8 years younger than him. My goodness, Vicente Luque, not really in a good position either. I mean, currently 1-3 in his last 4 fights, by the way, been knocked out in 2 of those bouts, and 1 of those losses is to Bilal Muhammad, which I think is worse than the other two. Nick Diaz, of course, lost to Robbie Lawler back in 2021. That fight did not look good for Nick Diaz. So what did we decide to do? We decided to put him up against Vicente Luque. So clearly they want Vicente Luque to get a win. But if Nick Diaz wins, oh my goodness. And apparently he was asking for Colby Covington, George St. Pierre. He was asking for Conor McGregor. I mean, he was asking for all the big names. But I mean, that's just who he is. That's just who he is. And no, Nick Diaz, never change. Never change, Nick Diaz. You were so funny, so entertaining. But yeah, those are all the new fights that have been announced in the past few days. All the ones Dana dropped today were about Abu Dhabi. I mean, I was shocked to see that Nick Diaz and Vicente Luque was announced. Shocked to see Tony Ferguson versus Michael Chiesa was announced. And also happy to see some other fights like Mackenzie Dern, Lupe Godinez, and Azamat Mirzakhanov, and Lonzo Medefield. In other news, I mean, we have an unfortunate news as Jack Della Maddalena actually got surgery. So his fight with Shavkat Rakhmonov at UFC 305 is officially off. They were supposed to fight Shavkat ranked 3, Jack ranked number 5. But I think this sets up perfectly Shavkat Rakhmonov to fight the winner of Leon Edwards and Bilal Muhammad after their clash in the main event of UFC 304 in Manchester, England. After that, I think Jack Maddalena could fight someone else who has worked their way up into the top 5. Top 10 or top 3, or even just fight Shavkat Rakhmonov after he gets a title shot and wins the belt. Let me just tell you, Shavkat Rakhmonov is inevitable. He is going to win the championship. Mark my words, I guarantee he's getting it done. Other than that, nothing too much. Nothing. I mean, I say nothing too much. Like, we didn't just list off a boatload of stuff. So that's all when it comes to new UFC news. I'm certainly pumped for all the cards coming at you. I mean, we're going to Denver. We're going to Louisville. We're going to Vegas. We're going to Perth. We're going to England. We're going all around. I think the next time we don't have a fight night is 4th of July weekend, July 6th. We don't have air. I think it's July 6th. It might be July 6th. I think it's July 6th. They're just giving their fighters a week off. So fun stuff all around there. And I'll tell you what else is fun. The NBA playoff. Ladies and gentlemen, just take a quick moment after I tell you, just to soak it in. The Minnesota Timberwolves finally won a game. Let me just soak it in for 1 second. Now, Zach, you may ask, last time we talked, weren't the Timberwolves down 1-0? So did they even the series up at 1-1? No, they did not. Did they make it a 2-1 series? No. Oh, did they avoid being swept, making it 3-1? Yes. That is exactly what happened, ladies and gentlemen. My goodness, the Timberwolves almost got freaking swept by the Mavericks, but we finally pulled it together and got a win. My goodness, I just cannot believe it. Before we talk about the Timberwolves and Mavericks series, as it's been so far, let's just talk about the Pacers and Celtics, because, I mean, just not even competitive. Celtics sweep the Pacers. 105-102 in Game 4. Boston wins 4-0. Pacers choked leads in Games 3 and 4 at home. Unreal. In that game, Game 4 win for the Celtics, Jaylen Brown, 29 points on 44 minutes. Jason Tatum, 26 points, 8 rebounds, 13 assists. Absolutely incredible. Al Horford, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 7 points. Derek White had 16. Drew Holiday, 17. I mean, this team is so freaking good. And as for Pacers, Tyrese Haliburton was out. I mean, he had a couple 30 bombs in the other games, but nothing too much. Pascal Siakam, double-double to end it out, 19 points, 10 rebounds. Andrew Nembhard, 24 points, 10 assists. He was doing his best. But we had Ben Shepherd starting. He only had 3 points. Very abysmal. Obi Toppin had 12 points. TJ McConnell off the bench with 15. Third most for the team. I mean, yeah, Pacer season comes to an end. So the Celtics, the best team in the NBA, has actually made it all the way back. They weren't frauds after all. We'll see if they can win. I mean, certainly they had an easier path than anyone else in the Western Conference. But I mean, I always like upsets. I like upsets. And there were no upsets in the Eastern Conference, really. Honestly, looking through the bracket, I mean, yeah, I guess the Pacers, the 6 seed, they had 2 upsets. But I mean, the Celtics just dominate them. And that was that. Celtics win 4-0. Not even going to touch on their series because it's been kind of boring. I'll tell you what I'm going to touch on. And that is everything we've seen so far in the Timberwolves and Mavericks series. We start out game 1, we mentioned last time, 108-105, Mavericks won. Came down to the wire. But game 2, ladies and gentlemen, how do I even tell you this? Game 2 was even closer. Holy cow, Timberwolves were up 6 after 1. They were up 12 at halftime and completely choked our lead. We gave up... We got outscored by 5 in the third, got scored by 8 in the fourth, and it came down with Luka Doncic hitting one of the most clutch threes I've ever seen. Just got to give it to the guy. Luka Doncic, 32 points, 13 assists, 10 rebounds in game 2. Incredible. Kyrie Irving had 20 points. Derek Lively had 14 points and 9 rebounds. I mean, my goodness. And yeah, hitting an absolutely beautiful clutch shot, and then Naz Reid had a semi-contested 3 to... end the game and unfortunately missed. But Naz Reid, amazing game in game 2. He had 23 points, made I think 7 threes. It was incredible. Anthony Edwards, 21 points. Mike Conley, 18. Rudy, 16. Cat with 15. Jay McDaniels, only 2 points. I'll tell you where our weak link was in game 2. It was Jay McDaniels. But yeah, it was unfortunate. So as we're heading back to Dallas, I'm like, okay, we gotta win. And game 3 comes around. And just, we were always just a step behind. We were always just a step behind. 116 to 107, Wolves lose. Wolves lost again. And even though we rallied. I mean, we were down by, I think it was, like 8 points. And we came back in the third and tied it up, sending it to fourth. We just got outscored 29-20 in the fourth. I mean, Anthony Edwards, 26 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists. He was doing his best out there. Kyle Anderson off the bench with 10. He was doing super good. But Karl Anthony Towns only 14 points. Rudy Gobert only 9. Nickeil Alexander-Walker on 20 minutes only had 3 points. Missed almost every shot he took. Just abysmal. Well, you know, Kyrie and Luka both get 33 points. Unreal. But I won't lie, some interesting did happen as Derek Lively injured himself, which would come into play as Game 4 came around last night. I was on the mic with two of my buddies, and the Timberwolves freaking did it. We avoided the sweep. We leave Dallas down 3-1. Looking to become the first team to ever come back from down 3-0 in a series. It's only been done once last year. 76ers brought it all the way to, I think it was 3-3 before finally losing to the Heat. I think it was the Heat, actually. And we'll see what we can do. I mean, Anthony Edwards last night, 29 points, 9 assists, 10 rebounds, doing the most. Rudy Gobert, 13 points, 10 rebounds. We'll take it. Karl Anthony Towns, 25 points, hitting so many clutch threes. He fouled out. I was worried, but man, we pulled it together. Jay McDaniels, 10 points. He was helping. Mike Conley, 14. Bench points, only 14. Usually we get more. Naz Reid, only 6 points. Kyle Anderson, only 2. Not the best. Luka Doncic, so I can out with Luka. 28 points, 10 assists, 15 rebounds. How are you going to let Luka Doncic have the most rebounds in the whole game? Unreal. Kyrie was only held to 16. I mean, I don't even know who started for them. I think it was, did Daniel Gafford start? I think Daniel Gafford does start, but not having Derek Lively off the bench really hurt. They had Max Kleber in. He only had 2 points, but Jaden Hardy on 12 minutes had 13 points. Oh my gosh, he was throwing down dunks too. So was Derek Jones Jr. He had 9 points. But thank goodness the shots weren't hitting for the Mavericks. 3-point percentage, they shot 40, only made 14. We shot 24 and made 11, so we had a 45.8% 3-point percentage. As for field goal percentage, Minnesota was in 52.7% range. Mavericks were at 42%. Free throws, Mavericks did way better. We missed 9. They only missed 3. We were able to out-rebound them, though. We were able to get more steals, and we're coming back to Minnesota for a little action. When you listen to this, it'll probably the game will just about be starting on Thursday, May 30th. I'm excited. I'm pumped. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm a little nervous, but I think every Minnesota team in the playoffs has lost their series 4-1. Let's try and break that, okay? Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving, they're getting tired, but man, we're going to need to sling it together if we're going to be going to push it to a game 6. If we can push it to a game 6, that would be incredible. Incredible. The NBA playoffs winding to an end. I don't think I'm going to watch the finals if the Timberwolves aren't in it. And let me tell you another league that I haven't really been watching that much, and that's NHL. We check in every single week, but I just haven't really been watching. I don't know what it is. I don't really have time, and when I do, I only really watch NBA because the Timberwolves are in it. I think that's just kind of how it is. But as for our conference finals, in the West, the Dallas Stars currently lead the Edmonton Oilers 2-1. They picked up a win last time out on Monday, May 27th. Dallas Stars won 5-3. Jason Robertson, a hat trick, 3 goals on 4 shots. Very nice stuff from him. Miro Heiskanen had 1 shot on net and was able to sink a goal. And as for Wyatt Johnston, he had 3 shots and was able to sink into 1. Good stuff from all of those players. Yeah, getting it done there. As for the Oilers, Connor McDavid had 1 point, Adam Hynek, and Zach Hyman, who had 7 shots on goal the other night. I mean, he was letting it rip for the Edmonton Oilers. And even though they went up 2-0, they were up 2-0 at 1 point, they lose 5-3. So Oilers going to look to rally tonight, May 29th. We'll see how they do. But honestly, I'm probably leaning with the Stars to take that series. I think I picked them 2 to win, but if the Edmonton Oilers can make it, that'd be pretty neat. That'd be pretty incredible. I mean, the Oilers, where did they finish out when it came to their standing? Stars were the number 1 team in the Western Conference, 113 points, 52-21-9 record. Oilers, number 2 team in the Pacific Division. They looked like they placed 1, 2, 3, four. They look to be the fifth seed coming in this. So you have a fifth seed and your one seed in the West doing battle. Best of luck to the Oilers. I know Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are hunting. And shout out Zach Hyman, because Zach Hyman is a beast from what I've been told from my hockey experts. On the other side of things, the Eastern Conference. I mean, the series is tied between the Florida Panthers and the New York Rangers. And as for these two teams, I mean, this is your number one and number three seed. Okay, this is Rangers are your number one, the Panthers are your number three. Just two of the best teams in the freaking conference, the Eastern Conference, that is. Yesterday, May 28th, Panthers were able to win in overtime 3-2 for the Rangers. Alexis Lafrenie and Vincent Trocheck were the only ones getting in the goals when it came to the Panthers. Sam Bennett on two shots was able to sink one in. Sam Reinhart on two shots also was able to make a goal. And on four shots, Carter Verhagen was able to get a goal. But it was pretty evenly matched. No one was Zach Hyman shooting seven shots on goal. Sergei Bobrovsky, 0.913 save percentage on 23 shots, only let in two, which is pretty impressive. As for the Rangers goalie, he had a 0.925 on 40 shots. Igor Shevsterkin was able to only allow in three. I think that's pretty incredible, if you ask me. I understand they lost by me. Come on. Come on. There's a huge shot differential there, like a 20-shot differential. My goodness. Who won game, how has the series been going as we head to game five tomorrow? Rangers won game three, so they were up. Panthers were able to take one. It's been competitive, been going to overtime in almost every game in the series. They've been to overtime twice now. Honestly, keep going. Honestly, these overtime games are so entertaining. They really bring the fans to life when you, are checking it out. Gosh, they've been to overtime in three of their four games. I just looked at that. Game two went to overtime. My goodness. My goodness, I don't know what's going on in the NHL Eastern Conference, but clearly regular admission is never enough time. The favorite teams to win the Stanley Cup as of right now, Stars are currently plus 160, Rangers are plus 230, Panthers are plus 380, and Oilers are plus 450. So your Stars are your favorites to win the Stanley Cup, but we'll see if they can get done. Still got a bit of time to go with the NHL playoffs, but hey, two more wins, and some of these teams could advance. Speaking of advancing, we'll be advancing to our next topic. And ladies and gentlemen, this is one of our newer segments we do on the show, which is, in fact, we go to discussing film, self-titled, your leading source for quick, reliable news, home for healthy and liberating discussion, all things pop culture. And we go through 10 of just the most interesting pop culture things that I find, and we give a few thoughts on them. And after that, we move on. And after we move on through that, we're actually getting to our UFC 302 predictions. So don't blame me if I kind of go quick, because I am absolutely pumped to give my UFC 302 predictions and go through the whole card. I'm still torn on a lot of these fights, if I'm being honest. I'm a little torn, but getting into discussing film, kicking it off. Kathleen Kennedy says, I think a lot of the women who step into Star Wars struggle with toxic fandom attacks a bit more. Because of the fan base being so male-dominated, they sometimes get attacked in ways that can be quite personal. Operating within these giant franchises now with social media and the level of expectation, it's terrifying. Fine. Kathleen Kennedy, I have no idea who she is. She works at the New York Times. That tells me all I need to know. But the four characters they're showing, one of which is from the new show Acolyte, which I just personally am not a huge Star Wars nerd, so I have no interest in. The other is the Asian chick from the new series who had like a love interest with Finn. She sucked. Okay, she sucked. She was a terribly written character. This is nothing against the actresses. Okay, this is all to do with the characters, is that she was terribly written. She was so unlikable, and she was forced. We hate being forced. She's absolutely terrible. After that, you had the one black chick from the Kenobi series. And my issue with her is that they nerfed Darth Vader against her. Darth Vader would have killed her, but for some reason they kept saving her. And she had such a huge role in the film when she shouldn't have, and she was so cringy when she spoke. It was just not likable. And as for Rey, they just butchered Rey. They had her just doing way too much by the third film in the newest trilogy, the sequels. So I don't really think it's the actress's fault. I do think it's how they're writing the characters. So when fans do get mad, I say you attack the people who are writing the story, okay? Don't necessarily come at the actresses personally, because they're just taking these roles. They're trying to make some money. And I don't blame them. I also enjoy making some money. our number two thing, and you know why it's number two, is because the first trailer for Moana 2 has been released. Of course, The Rock is back, voicing that one goofy, I don't even know what he is, a god or something. And Moana, I don't even know who voices her, but I mean, the visuals look great for this film. I never saw the first one, never really was for me, personally, for my audience, viewing perchance, but I mean, heck, it looks like Moana's going from home, looking to find more of her native people, bring them back home, unite them, and she's gonna face some trouble along the way, so should be entertaining. Probably I won't watch it, but I mean, certainly could be a good watch on like a rainy day or something like that. Number three, Sandra Hüller will star alongside Ryan Gosling in Project Hail Mary, directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller. The film follows a man who wakes up from a coma afflicted with amnesia and soon remembers he was sent 12 light years away from Earth to save humanity. I mean, come on. Come on, I still gotta watch The Fall Guy. With Ryan Gosling, you're already telling me that he's gonna be a freaking space astronaut waking up 12 light years away, but he has to save humanity. I'm in. I'm so in. It is going to be absolutely amazing. I'm here for it. Anything with Ryan Gosling usually turns to gold. And I mean, come on. Come on. What do you mean? He's an amazing actor. He gets the job done. I'm here for it. I'm absolutely here for it. In other news, number four, a new State of Play will happen tomorrow, which is actually going to be today when you listen to this. It will include a preview of 14 PS5 and PSVR 2 titles, including a look at PlayStation Studios titles arriving later this year. I'm excited for that. I'm actually getting a PlayStation 5. I'm going to have an Xbox Series X and a PlayStation 5. It's actually coming from my grandpa. I'm not personally buying it. It's kind of a gift of sorts. He didn't really want it. I'm like, yes, I will. Please take it. I'll be playing God of War, Detroit Become Human, Spider-Man, I mean, all sorts of games on that. I'm so excited for that. But I'll also be interested on Thursday, May 30th to see what new titles will be coming out. And maybe, heck, I'll be getting them. I know for a fact I'm getting the new NCAA game this July, but we'll see what other titles I choose to go with. I'm excited for it. Number five. I also never know what kind of stuff to touch on when it comes to this. Number five, 15 years ago, Up released in theaters. Up, one of the greatest Pixar movies of all time. I absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. It's just so heartwarming. It is emotional. It is great plot twist. The visuals are great. The ending is great. I love Up. Up is amazing. Up is a great film, and some people hate Up, and I hate you. If you hate Up, I hate you. Not to be a hater, but Up is a brilliant, brilliant film. Number six, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes has now passed 300 million worldwide. That was yesterday, May 28th, that was officially calculated. The budget for this film was 160, so 140 million in profit for this film, and it deserves all of it. It is one of the most visually stunning. I mean, it looks like a real world. It looks like Earth, essentially. The apes look real. The CGI team, the VFX team is just absolutely amazing when it comes to that. Came to that film, and I cannot wait to rewatch it once it comes out on streaming. Whenever it does, it is so good. It's so good. I want to go back to a theater and rewatch it. I love the Planet of the Apes movies. Number seven, Glenn Powell reveals that Tom Cruise has a six-hour film school movie that he only shows to his friends. Cruise is like, do we all agree this is what a camera is? This is the difference between a film camera and a digital camera, etc., etc., etc. Yeah, that does not surprise me. Tom Cruise is a very weird dude. I would definitely stay away. I would definitely stay away from Tom Cruise. I think he's a bit sketchy. I don't really want to get too much. If we want to get into Tom Cruise conspiracies, I'm here for it, but certainly something. A new poster was released for the final season of The Umbrella Academy. The trailer releases tomorrow, and tomorrow has become today, so I will have to find that season 4 trailer for The Umbrella Academy. Final season streaming August 8th on Netflix. I loved the first season was amazing. Second season was very good. Third season was kind of all right. It was kind of slow at times. So I am very pumped for the final season to see how they wrap it all up. And you know, honestly, people are like, oh, this could definitely keep going on more. They have more comic book source to use. But the writers are kind of like, we kind of want to end this here with where the characters' arcs are going to end. And honestly, if you want to end it when you're on a hot streak, that's usually when you end it at the best moment. Unlike Game of Thrones, when you completely force an ending for no reason. Like, they're just like, oh, we're just going to end it. It absolutely sucked. Number, gosh, what are we on now? Number, we're going to say 8. I might even be wrong, but number 8, actually, we're on 9. Number 9, the trailer for Call of Duty Black Ops 6 has officially been released, and it is very weird. It is very weird. I'm hearing there might be a 9/11 mission. You got Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush speaking. You've got a lot of politicians speaking. It is whack. It is very whack. I don't even know if there's going to be a 9/11 mission or something. That would be absolutely crazy. It is mind-boggling, the stuff that they're doing when it comes to the Call of Duty games. The Call of Duty franchise is down in a slump right now, so it's definitely going to need something to really boost it back. We'll see if this works out. I personally don't know if I'm going to get it. I might. A lot of we'll sees. I mean, pretty much every campaigns just don't hit the same. You know, those old Modern Warfare campaigns, Call of Duty 1 and 2, those campaigns hit. I mean, 3, 4, I don't even know what 5 was, Cold War, Vanguard. I mean, the new Modern Warfare remakes, they don't hit the same. They're not as good as the OG games. Maybe that's because I've grown up. I don't really know, but hey, what do you know? What do you know? And the final thing we will touch on is that Richard Gadd and Tobin Bell are rumored to star in the next Jurassic World movie. Richard Gadd is, of course, the hit star of the new series. What is it? Baby Reindeer. He's a very weird dude. And Tobin Bell plays, I think it's Saw. He plays the evil guy in Saw or something, so I'm happy with those two guys being the stars of the new Jurassic World movie. I can't believe the Jurassic World, like, franchise. I don't know if it's set in the same universe, if they're just remaking it. I don't know, but I'm here for it. I'm here for that stuff. I love those kinds of movies. And I'll do it, ladies and gentlemen, for our discussing film segment. I'm jonesing too much about UFC 302, so I'm going to grab a quick drink of water, and then we are going to go through all, I think it's only 12 fights. I think we only have 12 fights for this pay-per-view. We'll drop our predictions, go through each fight, and yeah, you might be shocked with some of the things we say. Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, kicking off this absolutely electric pay-per-view, we go to the first prelim of the evening. We are in the men's flyweight division, and it is a short-nosed matchup as Mitch Raposo takes on Andre Moscate. Something like that. Mitch Raposo stepping in on short notice is 9-1. Andre Lima is 8-0. 5'5-5'7 gives Andre 2 inches in height. Andre also has 3 inches in reach, 67 inches to 64. A switch stance for Mitch Raposo, orthodox stance with that right hand for Andre Lima. Let's start with Andre Lima. 25-year-old is from Brazil, and of his 8 wins, he has 5 KOs. He's also 7-0 in kickboxing, which I found pretty cool. He was supposed to take on Hyunsung Park, and that fight fell apart. So in comes Niamgurugal Tugandurl, something like that, and he pulls out. So Mitch Raposo steps in on just barely a week's notice. Very, very happy that Mitch is taking this fight. Andre Lima, though, staying on topic. This will be his second UFC fight. He actually fought on Dana White's Contender Series back in October and beat Rixon Zen-Dim. He then took on Igor Severino in March, and of course, Igor Severino decided to bite him, the infamous bite, which he actually got tattooed on him. So Andre Lima, fresh off of getting bit in March, is now back, and he's looking to pick up a win, of course, over Mitch Raposo. Mitch is 25 years old as well, from Massachusetts. Of his 9 wins, he has 4 KOs and 3 subs, and he's currently on a 4-fight win streak. Mitch was on Dana White's Contender Series back in 2021. He actually got submitted in round 2 by Jake Hadley. He had also been on season 29 of The Ultimate Fighter, where he had lost in the first round, so Mitch is a somewhat recognizable face. Unfortunately for Mitch, I just do not see him getting this one done personally. I do favor Andre Lima from what I saw in his little scrap with Igor Severino. And as for Mitch Raposo, I just think he's always going to be one of those guys who he's just never at that level to get into the UFC. But Andre Lima, I'm wishing him nothing but the best of luck, and all he has are KOs, so actually we're going to say decision. Decision to kick off UFC 302. It's usually a decision, I feel, on some of these pay-per-views, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. We are picking Andre Lima, though. Moving into our second fight of the evening, we head to the women's bantamweight division as Aline Perez takes on Jocelyn La Pantera Edwards. La Pantera, I swear, Pantera, isn't that the nickname for what's his face, our flyweight champion, Alexander Pantoja. I think that's what I was thinking of. Alien Fiona Perez, 9-2. Jocelyn La Pantera Edwards, 13-5. Jocelyn has 3 inches in height, 5'8 to 5'5. And she also has 4 inches in reach over Perez, 70 inches to 66. A switch dance for Alien Perez, orthodox for Jocelyn Edwards. I mean, who should I begin with? Jocelyn Edwards, we'll start with her. The 28-year-old is from Panama. Panama, huh? You rarely see someone from Panama. And of her 13 victories, has 5 KOs and 3 submissions. She had previously been on a 3-fight win streak until she lost to Nora Cornale in France back in September. I mean, Jocelyn Edwards been around since 2021, as she's gotten the distance in all of her fights. She had to really do anything impressive. I've seen her land a takedown, baby taken down, outstrike, get striked. I mean, it is what it is with Jocelyn Edwards. She doesn't do too much impressive from what I've seen so far. No offense to her. But she does have some reach and height, so we'll see if that comes into play as she takes on the 29-year-old Argentinian Aline Perez. 4 KOs and 1 submission in her 9 victories. And she's currently on a little 2-fight win streak. She lost to Stephanie Edgar back in 2022, but 2023 was kind to her. 2 wins, 2 decisions over to Ashley Evans-Smith and Lucy Pudilova. 12 takedowns combined in both of those fights. She loves to grapple, loves to get it done. Look, I don't know what more you want from me. She's the one that twerks when she wins. So give me that Aline Perez victory. And I'm honestly skinned. She actually was twerking after one of her wins, which is very weird because a lot of these female fighters, they're the most attractive, if you will. But Jocelyn Edwards, I just don't think her skill set is subpar when it comes to Aline Perez. I think grappling-wise, Perez is going to capitalize on Jocelyn Edwards' inability to grapple with her. Moving on to our third matchup of the evening, we're in the men's welterweight division. And oh man, I've been waiting to see this guy fight again. Mickey Gall takes on Basil the Habibi Hafez. Mickey Gall is 7-5. Basil is 8-3-1. 6'2" to 5'11" does give Mickey Gall 3 inches in height. And he also has 2 inches in reach, 74 inches to 72 inches. A switch stance for Mickey Gall and an orthodox stance for Basil Hafez. So far, all the matchups kind of we're getting a switch stance and we're getting an orthodox stance. Let's start with Mickey Gall, because I've pretty much watched almost all of his career fights. He's had 12 career fights in the UFC. He's had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah, he debuted when he was 1-0. That's pretty crazy. Mickey Gall, 32 years old, from New Jersey. He's the hometown boy. Of his 7 victories, he has 6 submissions. And of his 5 losses, he's been KO'd twice. Mickey Gall, I mean, joins the UFC, submits Mike Jackson in round 1, then submits CM Punk, then submits Sage Northcutt. I mean, quite an incredible run there, all rear naked chokes. Then runs into Randy Brown and just was not up to par. After that, fights George Sullivan, no idea who that is, then gets TKO'd by Diego Sanchez in 2019, picks up another win over no-name, loses to Mike Perry, beats a no-name, loses to Alex Morono. Last time he fought, April 2022, got knocked out in 3 minutes and 41 seconds by Mike Mallett. So Mickey Gall has had a less than stellar UFC run. We'll see what he can produce in a win, or not even a win, just a matchup here. Hopefully he can get a win. He does have the hometown on his side in New Jersey, but it won't be any easy goings as he takes on Basil the Habibi Hafez, 32 years old, from Pennsylvania. 1 KO and 4 submissions make up his 8 wins, and of his 3 losses, he's never been finished. Dude had 1 fight last year. He took it on short notice in his UFC debut, and he took Jack Della Maddalena to a split decision fight of the night. That was one of the best fights. That's a hidden gem on that July 15th Apex fight card. I mean, holy cow. Basil, 3 takedowns in round 1, shocked everyone, wins round 1. Round 2, just about did the same thing. Round 3, kind of was messing up at times, but I mean, just such an entertaining guy. I've been waiting to see Basil fight again. I personally think he is super good from the one fight I've seen. And I know Mickey Gall, he's got the home crowd on his side. He's got, you know, all the submission wins, but nah, give me Basil Hafez. And we're going to say round 2 KO. We're going to say round 2 KO for Basil Hafez. We got to space it up, guys. We got to space it up. We got to throw in these little oddball picks here and there. And actually, you know, I actually think Basil can actually get done. So that's what we're going with. That's what we're riding with. Give me Basil Hafez. Fez. Sticking with the men's welterweight division, we go to our next matchup as Phil Rowe will be taking on Jake Matthews. Very entertaining matchup here. Phil Rowe, the Fresh Prince, will be taking on Jake the Celtic Kid Matthews. Phil Rowe is 10-4. Jake Matthews is 19-7. 19-7 for Jake Matthews. Wow. 6'3 to 5'11 does give Phil Rowe 4 inches in height. And he is 7 inches in reach. 80 inches to 73. Oh my gosh. How was I unaware of that? Both men stand the orthodox stance. Wow. Just wow is all I have to say. Personally, that's crazy. I mean, my goodness. 7 inches reach? Let's start with Phil then. Let's start with Phil, the 33-year-old from Brooklyn, New York, of his 10 victories, 6 KOs, and 4 subs. That's right, 100% finish rate. And of his 4 losses, he's only ever been finished once, not so far in the UFC. He's 3-2 in the UFC. Last time he fought was 2023. He lost a split decision to Neil Magny, which a fight I think a lot of people thought he won. Before that, I mean, he was knocking out Nico Price, knocking out Jason Witt, knocking out Orion Koch. Pretty impressive. 3 KOs in the UFC. Had a KO on the Contender Series. His 2 losses are by decision. You know what, Phil Rowe? I'm liking what you're giving me, Phil Rowe, so far from what I've seen. His opponent, Jake Matthews, a seasoned veteran for only being 29 years old from Australia. Of his 19 wins, he has 5 KOs and 8 submissions. But of his 7 losses, he's been finished in 4 of those. Now, as of recent, he hasn't been finished, but he has in the past. Jake Matthews has been in the UFC since 2014. I mean, he was 19 years old when he joined the UFC. And I mean, you know, he's got wins over Li Jingliang in a fight of the night. He also has losses to Kevin Lee and James Vick, getting finished in round 1. You know, and then he's got wins over Diego Sanchez, Andre Fiallo, then losses to Sean Brady, Matthew Semelsberger. Last year went 1-1, was able to submit Darius Flowers in round 2 back in July, but in November lost a decision to Michael Morales. Just got outstruck on the feet. Not much you can really do in that scenario if you're Jake Matthews. And by the way, Michael Morales didn't even have that big of a reach advantage in that fight. Was able to defend a lot of takedowns from Jake Matthews. Jake only threw 1 at him, so not really taking the takedown approach. I'm riding with Phil Rowe in this one. That reach is just what really sticks out to me. Jake Matthews occasionally getting finished. Phil Rowe, all of his wins have come by finish. Yeah, give me that round 3 TKO for Phil Rowe. I think he's going to piece him up on the feet. Maybe even beat him up on the ground. We'll see what he does. Moving into our next matchup in the men's lightweight division as Grant KJD Dawson takes on Joe Soleke. Grant Dawson, 22-1. That is 20 wins, 2 losses, 1 draw. 13-4 is Joe Selecki's record, and a 1-inch height advantage for Grant Dawson, 5'10 to 5'9. 2 inches in reach for Grant Dawson, 72 inches to 70 inches. A switch stance for Grant, an orthodox stance for Joe. I mean, what more do you want? Grant Dawson, former top 15 contender, 30 years old from Florida, 4 KOs and 13 submissions of his 20 wins. Both of his losses have come by knockout, I might add. And that last knockout loss was in October when he shockingly got knocked out by Bobby Green in 33 seconds. I don't know if it was a hook or a strong jab, but he went down a couple follow-up punches, barely even 6, and Bobby Green won the matchup. Good stuff there, and that sucks because Grant Dawson had been on a ridiculous undefeated streak, my goodness, but I mean, he has multiple submissions and finishes in the UFC, TKOs of Laren Santos, submissions of Mark Madsen, Jared Gooden, Michael Trisano. Biggest win of his career, probably Demiris Magulov back in July. He was able to out-grapple him to a win. After that, though, getting knocked out by Bobby Green certainly doesn't help the odds. Certainly doesn't help the odds if you're asking me. And Joe Soleke, his opponent, I mean, this is going to be a grappler's fest. Let me tell you that. It's going to be a grappler's fest. Joe Soleke, 30 years old, from New Jersey, of his 13 victories, 1 KO and 8 submissions. And similar to Grant Dawson, 2 of his 4 losses are by knockout. And most recently, he was knocked out by Jakar Close in December via, wait for it, a slam finish. I mean, it honestly does not get more embarrassing than that getting slam finished. I mean, he does hold wins over Jim Miller back in 2021, which I think is pretty crazy. Other than that, I mean, nothing really stands out career-wise for me from Joe Selecki. He is from New Jersey, though, so he's got that going. But, you know, I think Grant Dawson, he took on an experienced guy in Bobby Green. It was a step up in competition. He lost. I think he'll be back. Give me Grant Dawson. I hate picking against the New Jersey boys, but I don't really think New Jersey guys have had the best luck when they fight in their hometown. You know what? Grant Dawson against Joe Selecki. Give me a round one submission. Grant Dawson getting right back to basics, turning a round one KO loss in October to a round one submission win in June. First day of June, might add, as well. After that, we head to the men's welterweight division as Nico the Hybrid Price takes on Alex the Great White Morono. What a fun names for these guys. The Hybrid, the Great White. I love these guys personally. Alex Morono, too. Nico Price 15-7 with 2 no contests. Alex Morono 24-9 with 1 no contest. 6'5'11" gives Nico 1 inch in height, and he has 4 inches in reach, 76 inches to 72. Both men stand in the orthodox position. Let's start with Nico the Hybrid Price. Nico, 34 years old from Florida, has 10 KOs and 3 submissions of his 15 wins. Wow. That's very nice. And Nico Price was supposed to fight Jeremiah Wells. Jeremiah did have to pull out, so in steps Alex Morono for this matchup. Nico Price, out of his 7 losses, has been finished 6 times and KO'd 5 times. He's also been KO'd in his last 2 fights, which isn't too good. One of those losses was to Phil Rowe back in 2022. And last year in July, I mean, Robbie Lawler retired by TKOing him in 38 seconds. So Nico Price has kind of had his chin rocked, you could say. As for his UFC career, not very good. Not very good. Biggest win, he has wins over Randy Brown, Tim Means, James Vick. I mean, as of right now, he is 1-4 with 1 no contest in his last 4 matchups. Actually, we go back to he's never had a win streak since 2018. Yikes. Yeah. I'm seeing all I need to a Nico Price. Alex the Great White Morono up next. Alex Morono, 33 years old from Houston. Of his 24 wins, 6 KOs, 7 submissions. And of his 9 losses, he's been KO'd 3 times. That's it, though. Never submitted. That's kind of a W. Alex Morono, been in the UFC 8 years now, joined in 2016. Biggest wins, he holds wins over Max Griffin, Donald Cerrone, he TKO'd in round 1. Mickey Gall, who fights on this card, Matthew Selmsberger, Tim Means. Last year, he submitted Tim Means in May, lost a close decision to Joaquin Buckley in October, and then last fought April 6th, where he won a unanimous decision over Court McGee. Okay, so Alex Morono coming in fresh, gonna do what he needs to do. He hasn't gotten a TKO since 2021. It changes. You already know Alex Morono. Give me a round one TKO. Give me a round one TKO. I love predicting finishes. Plus, Nico Price, all right, 34 years old, just been knocked out in July. Knocked out cold, too, might I add. You know, you get TKO'd. Now he got KO'd. That'll do it. Good night. Sleep tight. Don't let the bed bugs bite. That's all she wrote. And that's going to be all she wrote, folks. So, keeping us moving to our, is this our final prelim? I think this is our final prelim of the evening as we head to the men's middleweight division as Cesar Cecina Almeida takes on Roman Kopilov. 5-0 for Cesar Almeida, 12-3 for Roman Kopilov. 6'1" to 6' gives Cesar 1 inch in height. Roman has 1 inch in reach, 75 inches to 74. Southpaw with the left for Roman, orthodox with the right hand for Cesar Almeida. And we'll start with Roman Kopilov. Love this guy. I've been watching his fights now since I became a fan. The 33-year-old from Russia, of his 12 wins, 11 KOs. Now, might I add, of his 3 losses, he's been submitted twice. He is coming off a loss to Anthony Hernandez back in February of this year. And man, that was tough. He looked good on the feet, though. He looked way better on the feet, but he just kept getting taken down, and that was the killer. Before that, though, he had a 4-fight win streak, all KOs. three of them coming in round two, two of them head kicks. I mean, dude had a phenomenal 2023. Goes 3-0, all round two knockouts, two performance bonuses. So he's looking to get back to action. He's not taking on a grappler this time as he takes on the former kickboxer turned pro MMA fighter, Cesar Almeida. Cesar Almeida, 36 years old. You know, he actually holds a win over Alex Pereira in kickboxing. That's his claim to fame. He's from Brazil. Four KOs in his five victories and won a Dana White's Contender Series in a less than stellar fight. Then in April, actually the same card as Alex Morono, Cesar Almeida fought, and he got taken down three times in round one by Dylan Bukka, but then in round two was able to let the striking go and TKO'd him with elbows. So I'll see how Cesar Almeida does. He is 36, you know, 36, 5-0. It doesn't really give me too good of things. And I think Roman Kopylov is going to capitalize on that. And also the fact that Roman Kopylov, I think, is a better striker. Yeah, Roman Kopylov by, I think the magic number is round two head kick KO. We're probably getting a lot of finishes on this card, but that kind of makes it exciting, if you ask me. I like Roman Kopylov. I was going to pick him regardless of what happens. That's your prelims. That's your prelims, folks. Andre Lima by decision. Aileen Perez by decision. Basile Hafez by round 2 KO. I mean, anything could happen in that fight. Alex Morono by round 1 TKO. Phil Rowe by round 3 TKO. Round 1 sub for Grant Dawson. And round 2 KO for the boy, the KGB agent, Roman Kopylov. With that, gentlemen, I mean, another welterweight matchup. How many unranked welterweight matchups are we going to have on this card? As we kick off our main card with a matchup between Randy Rude Boy Brown, and Alessio Zaleski dos Santos, Capoeira. I don't even know where you squeeze the Capoeira on that long, long name. Randy Brown is 18-5. Alessio Zaleski is 24-7. 6'3 to 5'11 gives Randy Brown 4 inches in height, and he is 5 inches in reach as well. Both men are in the orthodox stance, 78 inches to 73. Nice. Nice work for Randy Rude Boy Brown, who is fresh off of a knockout in February. One of the top 10 knockouts of the year so far over Muslim Salakov. Got him out of there in 3 minutes and 17 seconds. He's currently on a 2-fight win streak and is 6-1 in his last 7. That only loss to Jack Della Maddalena. Let's go back for a second, guys. Through his last 10 fights, he is 8-2. And by the way, those two losses are to Vicente Luque and Jack Della Maddalena, two top 15, former top 5, respectively, for when Vicente Luque was in the top 5 fighters. So, I mean, Randy Brown has been fighting these guys a while now. 33 years old. He's from New York, so I mean, sort of close to New Jersey, kind of hometown. 7 KOs and 5 submissions, so 12 of his 18 wins are by finish. But of his 5 losses, he has been KO'd twice. Oh, no, he's been, actually, of his 5 losses, he's been finished 4 times. That was the stat that I had written down. Yikes. Randy Brown's been in the UFC since 2016. I mean, he's fought in Bilal Muhammad, Nico Price, Brian Barberino, Walray Alves, Alex Oliveira, Cass Williams, a lot of guys. 2-fight win streak, though. You know, your only loss in the last 4 years is to Jack Del Maddalena, which was over a year ago. Coming off a win in February, I'm liking your odds, Randy Brown. His opponent, Alessio Zaleski, 37 years old, from Brazil, 14 KOs and 3 submissions of his 24 current wins. He's on a 3-fight unbeaten streak. He's coming off a draw in November against Renat Fakhretdinov, and that was a weird fight where everyone thought he was going to knock him out in round 1. No idea how he survived. Round 2 was much closer. Round 3, Alessio won. Went to a draw. You know, it happens. But, I mean, this guy, been in the UFC since 2015. At one point was on a 7-fight win streak with knockouts of Sean Strickland, okay? And even Omari Akhmedov, another legit guy, before getting TKO'd by Li Jingliang in 2019. After that, picked up a win in 2020, picked up a loss in 2020. He actually holds a win over Benoit Saint-Denis. Very fascinating. And by the way, that was up in weight for Benoit Saint-Denis. But yeah, Alessio Zaleski dos Santos, not too shabby. 4-1 with 1 draw in his last 6. Not too bad. I don't think it's going to help him, though. I don't necessarily think he's going to get finished. You know, he's only been finished by Li Jingliang so far in the UFC. But I definitely see Randy Brown getting this one done. Even though he just got a knockout, give me Randy Brown by decision. That's kind of what I like to see. I think the Renat fight was kind of a fluke. And honestly, Randy Brown could easily knock out Lizzie Alessi dos Santos. I mean, he's 37, getting up there in age. We'll see what happens. But hey, the winner of this could be looking at a ranked opponent. Just you watch out. Mark my words. You jot down these words. Mark them down. And finally, we get into some ranked action with some ranked opponents. We head to the men's heavyweight division as the number 7 ranked Halton Almeida takes on the number 13th ranked Alexander Romanov. Halton Maladino Almeida, Alexander King Kong Romanov. He is so fat. I'll call it how it is. 262 pounds was his last weight. Yeah, right. He's walking around 280. 20-3 for Halton Almeida, 17-2 for Alexander Romanov. Very impressive, gentlemen. 6'3 to 6'2, these are some tall boys. 1 inch in height for Halton Almeida. 4 inches in reach for Halton as well, 79 inches to 75. Orthodox stance for Halton, southpaw for Alexander Romanov. This is my favorite stat so far. The takedown averages per 15 minutes, 6.88. For Halton Almeida, 4.32 for Alexander Romanov. And they're both over 50% in their takedown accuracy. Now that's impressive. Now that is impressive. Let's start with the number 7 ranked Halton Maldinho Almeida. Wow. Halton Almeida, 30 years old, from Brazil. He has 19 finishes in his 20 wins, 7 KOs, and 12 submissions. Of his 3 losses, 2 KOs. He was actually supposed to fight Alexander Volkov. He's currently ranked number 5 on this card, but instead, Volkov was moved to fight Sergey Pavlovich. Very weird booking move, since they're actually training partners. I have no idea what's going on there. We won't touch on that. But Halton Almeida had been on a 19-fight winning streak before losing to Curtis Blaydes in March. He set the takedown record for heavyweights in one round. He took him down 9 times in round number 1. 4 minutes and 39 seconds control over the best grappler in the division, Curtis Blaydes, which I guess is now Halton Almeida. And then shoots a terrible takedown, gets TKO'd with hammer fists, and Halton Almeida's win streak comes to an end. But it was fun. It was fun, but the signs were always there, you know. At lightweight, he's beaten Daniela Marquez. He's beaten Anton Trakalcic. He's moving up to heavyweight, beating Parker Porter, Shamil Durkhimov, Herzinger Rosenstruck, finishing all these guys. And then he couldn't finish Derek Lewis over 5 rounds. It made no sense. Then loses to Curtis Blaydes. Halton Almeida is not coming in with momentum, but neither is his opponent, Alexander Romanov. Okay, Alexander Romanov, the 33-year-old, is from Moldova. 5 KOs and 10 submissions of his 17 wins. So he also likes getting finishes, but those two decisions, very sloppy. Here's a guy who comes in 2020, you know, picks up 2 big wins, both finishes by submission. Then wins an odd split decision against Juan Espino. I mean, it was a very weird fight. After that, gets submission and TKO wins over Jared Vander Aan, Chase Sherman. And then August 2022, loses a bad decision to Marcin Tybura. Okay, loses a bad decision to Marcin Tybura. That fight clearly went the wrong way, scorecard-wise. And then gets TKO'd in 2 minutes by Alexander Volkov in March of last year. Last fought in July, picked up a win over Blagoy Ivanov. But Blagoy Ivanov is actually a walking box of rocks. And actually, Blagoy Ivanov is freaking almost 40 years old, right? He's 38. So as for Halton Almeida, I think he's fresher. I think I like his athleticism a bit more. And honestly, I think Halton Almeida takes down Alexander Romanov and gets him out of there in one. Honestly, I'm riding with a round one submission for Halton Almeida. I don't think this will be too much of hard work, but you can expect a grappling fest between these two. So if you don't like grappling, turn off the TV. I'm just warning you. Okay, I'm just warning you. After that, we get in our third to last fight of the evening, and it's in the middleweight division as the number 15th ranked welterweight Kevin Holland going back up to his old weight class of middleweight to take on Michael Olakajacek. Such a random matchup, but I love it. I absolutely love it. Kevin the Trailblazer Holland against Michael Hussar Olakajacek. I mean, Kevin Holland 25-11 with 1 no contest. Dude, that's absolutely crazy. This will be his 38th professional bout. I absolutely love it, Kevin. I love it. Michael Olakajacek, 19-7, 1 no contest. He's season 2. 6'3 to 6'4 gives Kevin 3 inches in height, and he has an insane 7 inches in reach. 81 inches and 74 inches. Orthodox stance for Kevin, southpaw for Michael Olakajacek. I mean, let's start with Kevin Holland. This fight was just made because this card was lacking more star power. So, like, Kevin Holland, do you just want to fight a random middleweight we picked? And Kevin Holland was like, absolutely. Kevin Holland, 31 years old, from Texas. Of those 25 wins, 13 KOs and 8 submissions. Now, I will say, of his 11 losses, he's only been finished 4 times. Not too bad last time he was finished. Finish for real was in September 2022. Finished on record was December 2022. That was when he had to stop the Wonder Boy fight because he broke his hand. But Kevin Holland, so entertaining. Just, I've never not seen, you rarely see a Kevin Holland fight. I should say, you rarely see a Kevin Holland fight that's not entertaining. I mean, I've been watching him since he was beating Anthony Hernandez in 2020. I saw him win all five of those fights in 2020 with four finishes, three of them in round one. But then he went through a saga where Derek Brunson was out grappling him, Marvin Vittori was out grappling him, Cal Daukaus was hitting him with a freaking headshot. And then he moved down to welterweight, okay, and he was finishing Alex Oliveira in round two, Tim Means round two. He would take a short notice fight against a juiced up Khamzat Chimaev, who would destroy him in 2 minutes. He would get rewarded with a fight night in Orlando, Florida against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, give one of the greatest fights of all time, was winning that fight, but he was trying to be a sportsman and let Stephen Wonderboy Thompson up. Last year, 2023, I mean, knocks out Santiago Ponzinibbio in April, submits Michael Chiesa in July, and took Jack Del Malena to a close split decision where he actually outstruck him before moving into March, where he would lose earlier this year to Michael Venom Page. It was a weird fight. Kevin just was not on the same striking level as Michael Page, but he's still good. He's still talented. And overall, he's much better than I think his opponent, Michael Olkajacek. 29 years old from Poland, 14 KOs and one submission of his 19 wins. Of his seven losses, he's been submitted five times and finished six times. So I definitely do not like Michael's odds of winning this fight. But, I mean, he holds wins over Gian Vellante. He has an overturned win over Khalil Rountree Jr. He's beaten Modestus Bukauskas, Shamil Gamzatov, Sam Alvey, Cody Brundage, Chidi and Chukani. Last fought in March, got submitted in a minute by Michelle Barra with a rear naked choke. I don't think we see anything different here, but Kevin Holland is not a round one finisher. He's round two finisher. Round two submission for the Trailblazer, Kevin Holland. Actually, Kevin Holland can knock him out for all I'm saying, but I just love Kevin Holland. I think he's entertaining, and I think he just knows he's going to win this, and the UFC is like, yeah, let's get this guy a win. We've been feeding him absolute killers. Jack Del Maddalena, Michael Page. Let's get back to those fun fights that we knew him for. And wow, gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to our co-main event. Gonna be so electric. It could be called the People's Main Event. Five rounds in the men's middleweight division as your former men's middleweight champion, the number one ranked middleweight, Sean Strickland, takes on the former title challenger. He's juiced to the nines every time he's in the octagon, Paulo the Eraser Costa. I mean, it don't get better than this for a co-main event. Sean Strickland, Paulo the Eraser Costa, let's get it. Sean Strickland, 28-6 record. Paulo Costa, 14-3. Both men are 6'1", 76-inch reach to 72-inch reach for Sean Strickland. And both men are in the orthodox stance. And their birthdays, I kid you not, we're in the same year and are legit like 2 months exactly removed. I mean, they're pretty similar if you ask me. Let's start with your former men's middleweight champion, guys, Sean Strickland. Is he still in the pound-for-pound? He's the number 14 pound-for-pound fighter on the planet. Come on, put some respect on his name. 33 years old from Las Vegas. Of those 28 wins, half of them are finishes, 11 KOs and 4 submissions. And of those 6 losses, he's only ever been KO'd twice. And those were two, actually, Elizio Zaleski Dos Santos, who fights on this card, and your current light heavyweight champion, Alex Barra. So those aren't too bad of people to be finished by. John Strickland, been fighting in the UFC since the early days when he was at welterweight, taking on Santiago Ponzinibbio, Tom Breeze, Kamaru Usman, Court McGee, before finally moving up to middleweight and going on absolute tear, beating Brendan Allen, trash-talking Jack Marshman during a fight, piecing up Christoph Schocko, destroying Uriah Hill, somehow going to a split decision against Jack Hermanson when he clearly beat him. Getting knocked out by Alex Barra, being on the wrong side of a decision against Jared Cannonier, then 2023, your 2023 Fighter of the Year, takes a short-nosed fight against the young, hungry, up-and-coming Frenchman Nazardine Imavov, outstrikes him, beats him. Then is forced to fight an up-and-coming Abusmagomedov in July, TKOs him in round two after losing round one, takes a short-nosed fight again against Israel Adesanya, shocks him in front of his home nation of Australia, becomes a middleweight champion, even dropped him in round one. Just amazing. Sean Strickland achieved what many wish they could have. and currently has the fight of the second best fight of the year. One of the debatable fight of the years for 2024. Did lose Adriscus Duplessis in January, but he's back. He's hungry and he's ready to get back in the win column. Sean Strickland, love him or hate him, he is entertaining. And one thing he did say leading up to this fight is that he does not see Paulo Costa beating him unless he slips up. And it's usually when they say something like that that they get caught. I'm just saying. But as for Paulo Costa, 33 years old as well, as we mentioned, from Brazil, 11 KOs and one submission of his 13 wins, or 14 wins now, my bad. Paulo Costa, at one point, was 12-0 undefeated, ladies and gentlemen. I'm so sorry, 13-0. I keep thinking he's 12-3 for some reason. And he was 12-0 at one point, wins over Yoel Romero, finishes of Dry Hall, Johnny Hendricks. And then got TKO'd by Israel Adesanya. Got KO'd in September 2020. Would take a year off, come back in October of 2021, lose to Marvin Vettori. He would take another year off and come back and fight Luke Rockhold in a fight of the night at UFC 278. He would take a year and a half off before coming back in February of this year. He last fought UFC 298 and had an entertaining fight against Robert Whitaker. Should have won fight of the night that night. Paulo Costa, I think, is still in prime form. He hasn't gotten a knockout in a while. Sean Strickland was just mentioning how, you know what, I'm not even going to lose unless I slip up and he knocks me out. So give me Paulo Costa round two knockout. I think it's inevitable. I think Paulo Costa gets back to his ways. And yeah, we're picking finish after finish after finish on this card. But I'm just overdue to see a real Paulo Costa win, okay? And I don't hate Sean Strickland at all. I find him entertaining. I think getting Paulo Costa in the mix would be very entertaining. Who doesn't want to see Paulo Costa versus Christus Duplessis? Or even a rematch against Adesanya in some crazy world. I'm here for it. Give me Paulo Costa round two knockout. Sean Strickland getting done Alex Pereira style. And gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, this is crazy. This is crazy. We get to our main event. As the number one pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, Islam Makhachev, your current men's lightweight champion, takes on the number four-ranked lightweight, the Diamond, Dustin Poirier. And it's Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns, ladies and gentlemen. The bloodline versus finish the story. This is straight out WWE. This is Dustin Poirier's last shot at the belt. This could be Dustin Poirier's last fight in his MMA career. This is crazy. It's crazy. We're seeing the end of the Diamond. We'll see if he's going to go out shining or go out with broken dreams. Yeah, that was a WWE reference and a freaking Rihanna reference. Yeah. Islam Makhachev, 25-1 on a 13-fight win streak. He could get the third longest win streak in UFC history with 14 if he wins his fight. In his way is the 39-fight veteran, 30 wins, 8 losses, 1 no contest in his 40th professional bout, Dustin Poirier. 5'10 and 5'9 gives Islam 1 inch in height. Dustin, 2 inches in reach, 72 inches at 70. Southpaw stands for both of these guys, and my goodness, I don't know. Southpaw stance, I mentioned. Who do we go with, guys? Who do we go with? Let's start with the Diamond. Let's start with the man. I mean, what a career. The fights, it's incredible. 35 years old, from Louisiana, born and bred. He loves Louisiana. Of those 30 wins, 16 KOs and 7 submissions. He's got that knockout power. Of those 8 losses, though, 6 times he's been finished. So that is unfortunate. But Dustin Poirier. Let's go through his career. This could be the last time we ever look at his career. I mean, Dustin Poirier, been fighting since 2010. Since 2010, a young diamond, was only 21 years old in the UFC. And since then, he's grown tremendously. I mean, 2012, he's submitting Max Holloway. He's the only man to ever submit Max Holloway. Absolutely crazy. Fighting Chan Sung Jung at a young age of 23. Fighting Cub Swanson. Fighting Conor McGregor at a young age. Fighting Diego Ferreira. Knocking him out. Knocking out Bobby Green in a minute. Losing to Michael Johnson. Then coming back and having a fight of the day against Jim Miller in 2017. Crazy No Contest against Eddie Alvarez, avenges that 2 years later. Knocking out Justin Gaethje in 2018, knocking out Anthony Pettis in a fight of the year. Oh my goodness, and I mean, one of the greatest fights of all time in 2019 against Max Holloway. Then, of course, becoming the closest man to beat Khabib, had one of the tightest guillotine locked in, his favorite guillotine of all time. Oh my goodness. And then, come on, one of my favorite fights. It's in my top five favorite fights of all time. Him versus Dan Hooker at the UFC Apex June 2020, the best Apex fight of all time. After that, knocking out Conor McGregor in January 2021. Then freaking breaking Conor McGregor's shin, ankle on his elbow. I don't even know what it was. Then beating Michael Chandler in a fight of the night in 2022. Absolutely incredible. Losing to Charles Oliveira after almost knocking him out in round one for the belt. Fighting Justin Gaethje for the BMF belt in July, getting knocked out. Coming back in March, getting ragdolled by Benoit Saint-Denis, almost submitted multiple times. And then knocking him out in round two. And that was just over. That was just like 3 months ago. But he's back. He's hungry. Dustin the Diamond Poirier. Is that an introduction for you, Dustin? By the way, I want you all to know something. The only time I've ever predicted Dustin Poirier to win a fight was the Khabib fight and the third Conor fight. Other than that, I've never picked Dustin Poirier. I don't know. I've never really been a fan of Dustin Poirier for some reason. But there's just something patriotic coming out of me. I can't handle it. But first, guys, let's go over to the cold seas of Russia for our champion. That is right. 25 wins, 1 loss with 13 straight wins, 16 finishes, 5 KOs, 11 subs. The 32-year-old from Dagestan, Russia, Islam Makhachev, the protege of Khabib. I mean, oh my goodness. Is this Rocky or what am I watching right now? It's really Dragunov versus Rocky. I can't believe it. Apollo Creed's gone. Apollo Creed's dead. What are we going to do? He just killed him. Essentially, that's what happened. I mean, he just killed Volk. So what is Diamond? What is Dustin Poirier going to do? He's going to need a good old American miracle, let me tell you that. Islam Makhachev, like I said, this is one of the craziest runs I've ever seen. Wins over Gleison Tebow, wins over Armin Sarukian, wins over Drew Dober, wins over Thiago Moises, Dan Hooker, Bobby Green, Charles Oliveira, Alexander Volkanovski twice. I mean, oh my goodness, dude is just on the run of a lifetime. I mean, it all started in 2021 when he finished Drew Dober. Then he finished Thiago Moises. Then he finished Dan Hooker, looking even better. Then he TKO'd Bobby Green. Then he wins the belt over Charles Oliveira, defends it in one of the best fights of 2023, and then head kick knocks out Volkanovski in 3 minutes back in October. I mean, he's getting better as we go. I mean, there is no reason for me not to pick Islam Makhachev. But like I said, ladies and gentlemen, we made a lot of picks tonight. I don't know if we were too strategic. I was just kind of looking at both names, looking at them a bit and going, okay, I'm going with this guy. Okay, I'm going with this guy. We're riding off of hope for a lot of this. And like I said, I've been picking with the storylines. All right, I've been picking with the storylines. Yeah, I knew DDP would win the belt. Yeah, I knew Ito Piro would win there. Yeah, I knew that Sean O'Malley would beat Marlon Vera. Yeah, I knew Alex Pereira would beat Jamahal Hill. And yes, I know, even though we picked Steve Ercik, I knew Pantoa was going to win. And even though we kind of got that feeling Islam Makhachev is going to get the win, I cannot not back the boys in blue. That is right. For the third time ever in my UFC predictions, I am going to pick Dustin the Diamond Poirier. That's right. We're getting out the marker. We're highlighting him. We're throwing him in a spreadsheet. We're plastering it on social media. Dustin Poirier. I'm here for it. I'm here for it, guys. But it's just a matter of how. I just highlighted Islam Makhachev. I kid you guys not. I just highlighted Islam Makhachev on my papers. We are not highlighting Islam Makhachev. We're picking Dustin Poirier. It's more fun to pick the underdog. It's more fun to pick the guy who has lost the last two times by round three submission with a rear naked choke. The guy who was just knocked out last July. The guy who lost round one badly to Benoit Saint-Denis. Probably got 10-8'd. Just the underdog story, the fact he shouldn't even have this title shot, the fact that this is the final fight of his career potentially, and it's to fight the belt against an old Russian who's on a killing spree. I mean, it writes itself. And, you know, what are we going to do? How is Dustin Poirier going to finish this fight? Well, for that, we need to do a little analyzing as of late. So Dustin Poirier, he's really been leading on a guillotine, especially in the last fight. He had 4 guillotine attempts. He wants to get a guillotine. He's going to be hunting for a guillotine if Islam gets him against the cage and tries to go for a takedown. In the Michael Chandler fight, one of the biggest strategies Poirier had was the fact when Michael Chandler landed a takedown and just slipped up for a second. Now, obviously, Chandler's grappling style is different from Islam's, but Poirier was able to capitalize and get a submission. When it came to the McGregor fight, the Benoit St. Denis fight, I mean, even the Khabib fight, there was clearly some better abilities on the feet when it came to the boxing. And I honestly think Dustin Poirier does have better boxing than Islam Makhachev. Kickboxing, I actually think Islam's better. As for Islam, I mean, the only thing I saw was he ran out of gas in that Volkanovski fight. And I mean, when we look at Islam's career, I mean, the only time he's ever been past round 3 was when he beat Thiago Moises at the start of round 4. And then when he had a fight of the night against Alexander Volkanovski, which a lot of people thought he won. Other than that, he's had round 1 finishes, round 2 finishes. So what's going to happen? I mean, round 3 is going to come around, the most dreaded round of Dustin Poirier's career. I mean, he has been submitted and knocked out more times in round 3 than any other round. And what's he going to do? What's the American Patriot going to do? He's going to pick up his trousers. He's going to go to work, and 3 minutes in, he is going to catch Islam coming in. Islam's going to drop. He is going to slap on a guillotine, and we are going to get a round 3 submission from Dustin the Diamond Poirier, and he's going to win the belt. He's going to win the lightweight championship. You heard it here first, folks. And then he's going to retire his daughter's the first fight he's ever allowing his daughter to come to and watch. Maybe like, oh, he's being such a bad parent. No, he just doesn't. His daughter, like, hates to see her dad get beat up. This could be his final fight. He'll probably retire. And imagine just wrapping the belt around his wife, wrapping it around his father if he's still alive. I mean, just hold it in the air. It would be so emotional. And I refuse to be the guy who went, oh, I'm going to just pick the guy who definitely should win. Like, there's no reason that he should win. But we love the storylines. We rooted for Steve Ersig, you know, and now we're rooting for Dustin Poirier. Maybe it'll pay off. Maybe it won't. I have no money on the line. Only my pick's reputation. Actually, we now have track of our picks. I'm 129-79, so we are plus 50. Let's try and turn that into plus 62 and go 12-for-12 on predictions, guys. But, I mean, holy cow. Holy cow. I'm excited. I'm pumped. UFC 302 goes down this Saturday, June 1st in Newark, New Jersey. Early prelims start at 5. Regular prelims start at 7. The main card starts at 9. So let's go through that main card again. Randy Brown over Elizio Zaleski dos Santos. Either I'm feeling knockout, but probably decision. Holt Nomeda against Alexander Romanoff. I'm feeling Holt Nomeda gets a submission in round 1 or 2. I mean, I just think his grappling is better than Romanoff. Kevin Holland's going to do whatever he wants with Michael Kajacek. Give me a round 2 submission. That's Kevin Holland's magic round. Paulo Costa going to catch Sean Strickland. All right, Sean Strickland's going to be caught lacking. Paul's finally going to erase someone and get a round 2 knockout. And Dustin Poirier just rewrites everything statistically we know about predicting fights and gets a round 3 submission of Islam Makhachev. It's going to be history. It's going to be amazing. And I'm going to be like, yeah, I called it. I called it here on the podcast. And this is evidence. This is evidence that we called it. So lock it in, folks. Take it to the bookie and make your money. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, that'll cap off the podcast. I mean, this was fun. This was fun. Going through UFC 302. I love UFC. If you guys can tell, I'm a little UFC sucker. I love my UFC. I'll be sure to, we're dropping it. Gosh, episode 100 is coming up fast. I want it to align with my UFC 303 predictions video, but that's not till the last week of June. Like, I'm talking, that'd be June 26th or 27th. We're uploading that and recording it. And we're already at episode, gosh, am I really going to only drop 4 episodes in June? We'll see, guys, and probably is not going to align like that, but hey, it happens. It is all going to be good. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully the next time we talk Monday, the Timberwolves are still in the playoffs. Dustin Poirier is a champion, and there are sunny skies ahead for all of you listening. Guys, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.